Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, recognizing the value of financial advice since 1937. Putnam Investments, a world of investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
2 years ago, nobody knew how much longer Citigroup was going to be around. Today, it posted billions in profits. Item two, Bank of America is getting going on foreclosures again. So somebody, remind me, what's that saying about how the more things change? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Constellation Energy, committed to customer choice and powering America's clean energy future through investments in nuclear, wind, solar, and efficiency technologies. And by Ally Bank, committed to customer service. At allybank.com, visitors can chat online with a customer care associate 24/7.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Monday, today the 18th of October. Good to have you here. Don't look now, but the bank that used to be the very definition of financial crisis just posted its third straight quarter of profits. Citigroup booked $2.2 billion July through September. J.P. Morgan announced pretty much the same thing Friday, you might remember, but Marketplace's Elisa Roth reports it's not like either bank is bringing in tons of revenue.
One of the reasons both Citigroup and J.P. Morgan are doing better is regular customers are doing better. Or more to the point, they're doing less badly than they were. When lots of customers start defaulting on loans, banks have to put aside money to deal with all the delinquencies. Gerard Cassidy follows banks at RBC Capital Markets.
Now that the delinquencies are declining, the money that has to be set aside for future losses is also declining because in the future there will be fewer losses.
In Citi's case, losses from consumer debt gone bad dropped by hundreds of millions of dollars, and the bank took $2 billion back from money it had put aside to deal with those losses. Cassidy says these are signs the banks are on the right track.
At this point in the cycle, the earnings recovery for the banking industry will be driven by credit recovery, which is what we're seeing today.
But Citigroup and J.P. Morgan aren't representative of all banks. Sean Ryan is an analyst at Morgan Joseph, which is an investment banking firm. He says credit cards account for a lot of the improvement in consumer debt, and Citi and J.P. Morgan have disproportionate shares of that business.
Industry-wide, while you will see some improvement in credit, because so much of it has been concentrated in cards, it's really not going to be a lot of banks that see a huge benefit.
There's another issue, too, though. Big and small banks need to start making money again, not just losing less of it. And to do that, they need to start lending again. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
In France today, railway workers, truck drivers, high school students, you name it, everybody was protesting. Hundreds of gasoline stations have run dry because tanker drivers and oil refinery workers have walked off the job, too. They're all upset over the government's plans to cut the budget deficit by raising the retirement age. France being France, the strikes were entirely expected, but similar changes have been accepted without too much protest in other European countries and in the United States as well. So, other than the fact that that's what they do, why are the French rebelling so much this time? From the European desk in London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
During one of today's protest rallies, cars were overturned and set on fire. To the outside observer, the fury seems mystifying. The French reform, raising the minimum age of retirement from 60 to 62, seems relatively mild. But Philippe Aguillon, professor of economics at Harvard University, says you must bear in mind many workers were already in militant mood. There's not much égalité in the workplace.
people are not well treated by their bosses. I mean, there is a bad culture between employer and employee. The employee has distrust for the employer. The employer tends to look down at the employee. You see what I mean?
He says that manual workers in France resent the pension reform. They may have started work at the age of 16, but they too will have to carry on to the age of 62 before they can retire. Jacques Millard is a lawmaker and close ally of President Sarkozy. He puts the protest down to what he calls French revolutionary fervour.
We are a rebel nation, there is no doubt, because people are always against the government, whatever it is, and they take this opportunity to demonstrate.
But he believes that in spite of tomorrow's planned national strike, the French Senate will pass the pension reform bill into law as scheduled on Wednesday.
This reform is inevitable and it will be done.
60 years ago, France had 5 workers for every pensioner. Today, that number has dwindled to only 2, and people are living longer. The French will have to work longer as well, says Millard. They'll just have to accept it. At the European Desk in London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, financials all the way, baby. Forget the mortgage mess and who did what to whom in processing foreclosures. You flash a couple of $1 billion in profits, traders will forgive you anything. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. On the topic of foreclosures, there was this today from Bank of America. B of A says it's going to redo the paperwork on more than 100,000 mortgages it had stopped foreclosure processing on and try to get that ball rolling again. Pretty much everybody in the long financial chain of the American real estate market is trying to figure out what to do with all this paperwork, not least of all Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. They're the government-owned companies that guarantee the bulk of this country's home loans. They have given banks until today to review their foreclosure procedures. Fannie and Freddie say the review will protect the integrity of the process. But our senior business correspondent Bob Moon reports it could also be a move to protect taxpayers.
Right along with big lenders, the government is keen to avoid a costly legal quagmire. Tom Ajami is a securities law attorney. He worries that taxpayers who support Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac could end up shouldering the carrying costs for millions of mortgages in limbo.
You have a state of delay. You have a state of sort of paralysis, which may then put Fannie and Freddie online as guarantors of these loans.
Some experts say the worst case could see the government-run mortgage giants covering hundreds of billions of dollars in mortgage defaults without the ability to sell off properties to limit losses. George Mason University finance professor Anthony Sanders considers that highly unlikely, but he says even now losses are mounting with every day of foreclosure delay.
The government has to make good on the difference between what the investor was promised and what the homeowners are paying. So if 2 million homeowners suddenly just aren't paying any mortgages yet get to live in the house, Fannie, Freddie, then the taxpayers have to pick up the tab.
But the two big mortgage buyers are making it clear they intend to protect taxpayers. Brad German speaks for Freddie Mac.
When there are errors that result in additional delays that add to the losses, we have a range of remedies beginning with fines, charging for the additional costs that have been incurred, forcing the repurchase of the loan, or even transferring the servicing from that lender to a different lender.
German says that's why the lenders have been ordered to ensure their foreclosure procedures are airtight. George Mason's Anthony Sanders worries any legal limbo could end up crippling the already reeling housing market if investors lose their appetite for mortgage-backed securities. Better, he says, to let lenders work out their troubles instead of calling for an all-out freeze on foreclosures.
If we don't put a moratorium on, don't do anything nutty, we can probably work through most of this in a couple of months. In that case, then, it's just a couple of months' worth of losses for Freddie and Fannie.
Provided the lenders can get their foreclosure act together soon. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Go ahead and add the Securities and Exchange Commission to the list of regulators that are trying to untangle the foreclosure mess. The SEC is said to have launched a probe into the signing and or transferring of mortgages among lenders. They're not officially commenting on it. But who actually owns the mortgages in question is a big deal not only in the foreclosure crisis, but also in the world of mortgage-backed securities, as Bob was saying, those toxic assets that were at the heart of the financial crisis 2.5 years ago. Congressman Alan Grayson of Florida has been vocal about the foreclosure crisis. He wants criminal investigations into what the banks have been doing as well. Congressman, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me with you.
On a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being housing Armageddon and 1 being, you know, a momentary hiccup, where does this foreclosure mess lie on a scale of systemic risk?
We don't know, and that's the way it is with systemic risk. It's often coming from a place you never expected. But it is possible that we're going to be at a 10. It's possible with this scenario. Thanks to the privatization of property ownership records in this country in the past 5 years, we're now at a point where we're not sure who owns what. For centuries, going back to common law under English times, if you had an interest in property, you had to record it physically by filing a paper in the courthouse and paying your stamp tax. In the last 5 years, the mortgage industry in the United States has taken it upon itself to try to avoid those stamp tax fees by deciding among themselves who owns what and establishing sloppy electronic records in place of the paper records at courthouses.
You have said, Congressman, that you believe that this is deliberate systemic fraud. The banks, on the other hand, say, you know what, we got a couple of pieces of paper wrong out of millions of transactions. What are we, the news-consuming public, to believe?
Well, what we know already is that they have taken away from the states and localities any ability to reconstruct at this point who owns what, and done things that are already public record, like backdating documents, forging signatures. It's fraud. It's perjury. If anybody but a bank were doing it, it would be clear that that person should be in prison.
A friend of mine said to me the other day, you know what's going to happen on this one, Kai? He said, you know, Congress is going to get involved. They're going to find some way to make this right with the paperwork with the banks. They're going to maybe have the banks pay a nominal fee, and then the taxpayers are going to wind up on the hook for whatever the actual solution turns out to be.
No, I don't think so. I think what's actually going to happen is that the Federal Reserve is going to become involved, and the Federal Reserve is going to wave its magic wand by buying these assets of questionable value or validity. And once the Fed has them, then the Fed will be able to absorb the losses because the Fed can print money. That's what I think is likely to happen. And I think it's a shame because while that may not use tax dollars to take care of a problem created by private interests and a problem that should be borne by private interests, it does cheapen the value of every dollar in your pocket and your savings and the value of every asset that you own.
You sit on the House Financial Services Committee. I'm sure you could call up Chairman Frank and say, listen, Barney, we need to do something about this. When are you guys going to have hearings?
Well, obviously we're a little preoccupied right now. I'm a little preoccupied. I'm the first Democrat to represent my district in 34 years, and I won by 4% of the vote in 2008. So I have a couple of other things on my mind right now apart from this. But notwithstanding that, I think that we've accomplished a lot already. For instance, flagging this as a potential systemic risk.
So after the election, then, we could perhaps have some hearings.
I'm on the Oversight and Investigation Subcommittee of the Financial Services Committee. After the election, we will ask the powers that be for permission to have such a hearing. I'm hoping that we get it because we're talking about trillions and trillions of dollars worth of value.
Alan Grayson, Democrat of Florida, on the foreclosure mess. Congressman, thanks very much for your time.
Good. Thank you, too.
And now, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials rose 80 points today, about 0.75%, closed at 11,143. The NASDAQ tacked on 11 points, about 0.5%, finished at 2480. The S&P 500 added 8 points, nearly 0.75%, settled at 1184. Citigroup shares plumped up 5.5% on that earnings report. Other bank rode Citi's tails. Investors ran up shares of Bank of America 3%. JPMorgan Chase closed up 2.75%. After the bell, Apple reported another blowout quarter. Profits were up 70% on strong sales of, yes, iPhones and iPads. Here's my favorite numbers item in a long, long time. Strong demand for Mr. Potato Head and Nerf footballs helped Hasbro turn in better than expected profits. Shares scampered up nearly 4% today. And you are listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Reputation Defender, monitoring, protecting, and helping improve your online reputation while deleting personal data from websites that sell it. ReputationDefender.com. by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act. And by Vanguard, whose mission is to simplify investing and to help people reach their financial goals at vanguard.com/public radio. Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to freakonomicsradio.com.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Tuesday. The Commerce Department reports on construction of new homes for September. The annual American Bankers Association and American Bar Association Money Laundering Enforcement Conference wraps up in Washington. And you see the pink ribbons. October is National Breast Cancer Awareness Month. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. Whether it's actually true or not, it sure seems like everything in the public discourse today is about jobs. Tax policy? Jobs. Currency exchange rates? Jobs. Climate change? Also jobs. California passed a landmark climate change law 4 years ago, back when the unemployment rate here was under 5%. Today, it's more than double that, which gets us to the fight over Proposition 23 on California's November ballot. Prop 23 would put the climate change law on ice, if you will, until unemployment drops back to around 5%. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Eve Tro reports.
A yes on Prop 23 would postpone California's climate change law indefinitely. Supporters say that would protect companies from steep fines on carbon emissions that contribute to global warming, fines that could force companies to close or move.
Save jobs. Stop the energy tax. Yes on 23.
And a no on 23 means the climate change law goes forward, a law supporters say creates new green jobs. If 23 passes, they see disaster.
23 would pollute our air, kill clean energy jobs, and keep us addicted to costly oil. Vote no on 23.
So since when is the California climate change law only about jobs? Since oil refiners defined the debate that way with their ballot measure.
Don't create green jobs at the expense of already existing manufacturing jobs in the state.
That's Bill Day. He's a spokesman for Valero, a Texas company that refines oil in California. The company helped get Proposition 23 on the ballot, and it spent $4 million to support it. Other oil refiners have spent millions, too. Who's funding the other side? Silicon Valley. Venture capitalists who see the economy moving away from fossil fuels.
Where do you think the jobs of the 21st century are going to come from?
Alan Salzman is CEO of Vantage Point Venture Partners. He's heavily invested in clean tech, like solar power and LED lighting. He says it's short-sighted to stall on building the 21st century economy in order to help oil-dependent business.
If you go back to New York City, you know, 1900 to 1910, you know, was it a time to invest in blacksmiths and stables? The next two or three decades of rapid growth are in the clean tech fields.
He says California is a test case for whether the United States can build its own clean tech market, and investors around the world are watching.
Banks, insurance companies, the private investment force that's out there waiting to finance a move to a low-carbon economy.
That's Kevin Parker, head of asset management at Deutsche Bank. He says California's climate change law has already lured billions of investment dollars into wind, solar, and energy efficiency projects. But if Proposition 23 passes, Parker says,
we have plenty of other places to go with our capital where the regulators and national governments are welcoming private investment.
Parker says the money will go to countries like Germany and China that have committed to building and selling green technologies. This isn't lost on Kelly Budding. She's protested against Proposition 23 outside a Valero gas station in downtown Los Angeles. She wants green jobs here.
The global greenhouse as they drive by in their cars, running on oil.
It's true, we still live and work in a fossil fuel economy. And oil refiners like Valero are hurting because the recession's lowered retail demand for gas. Valero closed a refinery and lost $2 billion last year. Valero's Bill Day says punishing oil refiners right now only punishes consumers who still drive regular cars.
We get around by using gasoline and diesel fuel. That's how this country transports itself, and that's how California transports itself.
But there are many Californians eager to transport themselves into a clean energy world and the new jobs that go with it. The latest polls suggest voters will strike down Proposition 23, and California's climate change law will move forward. In Los Angeles, I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
Here's why any given economic indicator, from A-listers like gross domestic product on down to the bottom of the statistical barrel, ought to be taken with a grain of salt. Today, the National Association of Home Builders announced that its Home Builder Confidence Index was up, the first increase in 5 months. It's at 16 now. Of course, anything below 50 is bad, so 16 is actually downright lousy. Commentator Dan Dresner says the general economic conversation is a whole lot like that headline on the Confidence Index. Kind of misses the point.
America is not in a good place financially right now. You know the problems. Americans don't make things anymore. We consume too much and don't save enough. The financial sector takes up an ever-growing slice of profits and economic activity. The apparent reason for these problems? American values have gone down the drain. Tom Friedman recently wrote that we had a values breakdown. He's far from the only commentator to make this point. According to these analysts, individuals in the United States have neglected virtues like thrift and industry in favor of the quick and easy payoff that comes from working in finance. To which I say, give me a break. We are confusing values with incentives. There is little evidence that individuals look down on either thrift or hard work. Instead, what I see is people responding rationally to market prices. A broad spectrum of Americans saved less over the past decade because they were responding rationally to the massive appreciation of their most prized asset, their homes. Once the housing bubble burst, we started saving more. Also, high-skilled individuals went into the financial sector because the salaries were highest there. One can certainly question the virtues of capital markets, but the idea that financiers don't work hard or put in long hours is absurd. In fact, Americans worked more hours per year than every other G8 country. That's according to the most recent economic data. Labor productivity figures also suggest that Americans have not fallen down on their jobs. This is good news, by the way. Incentives are much easier to change than values. If we want people to save more and work in different jobs, then we should worry less about morals and more about tax law. Increasing sales taxes would reduce overconsumption. Harmonizing the tax rates on capital gains and personal income would dull the allure of finance for skilled workers. Ending the interest rate deduction on mortgages would slim down the number of McMansions. If commentators want Americans to put their effort into different endeavors, then the incentive should be set up appropriately. Claiming that American values are eroding is, well, lazy.
Dan Dresner is a professor of international politics at Tufts University. As always, drop us a line. Tell us what you think about what Dan said or anything else. Our website is marketplace.org. Click on the link that says contact. Chances are you've used or at least heard of Craigslist. 50 million people a month use it to find an apartment or a couch or a job or sometimes even a date. Basic online stuff. But there are some very weird things going on not too far beneath the surface.
Knock, knock! Who's there? Irma? Irma, there's a lot.
That's a clip from the online video Accordion Idol. It launches season 2 of Craigslist TV. The video series behind the ads is the brainchild of reality TV producer Drew Brown. Drew, it's good to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Did you go to Craig Newmark and say, listen, I've got this idea?
I did. I was a producer on Project Runway 4 or 5 years ago in the first 3 seasons.
I love that show, by the way, but anyway.
Yeah, and I felt like just empowered enough to like email this guy I didn't know. I'd always wanted to do a show about the classifieds, and he, being the guy he is, responded right away. I met Jim Buckmaster through the process,
the
of course.
Yeah.
And I built a long relationship. It took a long time to get their trust.
Well, they are interesting individuals. We've had Jim Buckmaster on the program. I've talked to Craig. I mean, they are not people who will jump into this kind of thing.
No, and they didn't jump. 4 years is the longest jump in history.
So here's the editorial question. Do you have creative control?
I mean, we certainly share it, but unlike working with a network where I'm expected to sort of contractually display the clip, you know, a couple times before it's finalized, I think they really trust us to tell the stories. But they're great partners in that fix because they think the clip ends up being entertaining.
I mean, they're entertaining, but they're also nuts. I mean, we played that accordion clip. I mean, that was just craziness.
As a director, we walk into these situations. All I know is that Robin came in the day before and says she has a free accordion and she wants to hold this American Idol style competition.
Yeah.
That's all we know.
There is, though, as with the accordion lady, there is more to these stories than you think there is. There's one called Ninja for Hire.
Yeah.
Dear Craigslist, who'd like to hire a ninja? Need a ninja massage? Do you need a cook? Then call upon Ninja Nick. Guaranteed to be entertaining. Hire me.
Tell us the story behind that one.
I saw Ninja for Hire. I was like, that sounds hilarious.
Yeah, we should do.
I didn't really expect it to be anything more than hilarious. And when we get there, we park the cars. We're going up. We're knocking on the door. And we realize that Nick doesn't live in the house. He actually lives in his car that's parked at that address.
Mm.
He eventually found a place to live, which was with his best friend that happened to have a room for rent on Craigslist. So it was sort of like this weird serendipitous journey. And that set the tone for this entire series.
There was another one I wanted to ask you about. It's the one with the superheroes.
Well, you know, for people that don't live in L.A., if you go on Hollywood Boulevard, there's costume characters everywhere that want you to take a picture with them. And they hope for a tip. They got shut off the boulevard on Memorial Day of this year. Not long after, Chris Dennis, a.k.a. Superman, put an ad on Craigslist trying to unite all the ejected superheroes under the heading Town Hall of Injustice. About 2 days later, we're sitting in front of a conference room table with Catwoman, Batman, Darth Vader,
that's
the Incredible
nuts.
Hulk.
Yes, they have typecasted all of us because you've got bad apples over here. Michael Jackson coming out. Zorro, Donald Duck, Yoda, Goofy.
That's from Superheroes Unite of the new season of Craigslist TV, videos which together have gotten something like 2.5 million page views. It's worth mentioning. But Drew, I have to ask you this. Having come from network television, it's got to be in the back of your mind someplace that this could possibly turn into something bigger.
I get this question, like, wouldn't we want to be on network television? It's like saying, like, wouldn't you love to be in a shrinking industry? I do think that we have our home and our audience, and we're being seen and being loved, and that's success for us for right now.
Drew Brown, he's the executive producer of Craigslist TV. You ought to check it out. There's some crazy stuff there. Drew, thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, seeking new ways to reduce the effects of market volatility for investors. This is Putnam Today. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note today, we've got a couple of people around here who've got those standing desks, you know, the ones that are sort of chest high, so that if you do have to spend your day in front of a computer, at least you don't spend it sitting. Seems there's some disagreement among ergonomics experts about whether that's a good idea or not. The Washington Post quotes one guy as saying sitting at work is so bad for you, it's the new smoking. Another guy said standing desks are so stupid, they're the high heels of the furniture business. So, I don't know. We report, you decide. Either way, that's Marketplace from American Public Media this Monday. Today, the Dow rose 80 points, about 0.75%. The NASDAQ tacked on 11 points. That's 0.5%. The S&P 500 added 8 points, nearly 0.75%. Our producers include Avishai Artsy, Millie Jefferson, Megan Larson, and Fiona Ng. You can tune in tomorrow to the Marketplace Morning Report for the latest in business and economic news. And coming up next time on this broadcast, incentives and innovation.
The reason Charles Lindbergh flew across the Atlantic Ocean was to win a cash prize. What all of us got for that prize money? The aviation industry.
Freakonomics Radio is back. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Do hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.